So anyway, good evening. Thank you very much, everybody, for coming. I have this something that happens whenever I come to San Francisco. I get lost, and so this evening I got very, very lost. I thought the talk was 7 o'clock, and at 7 o'clock I was just about almost found, but still very, very lost, heading in the wrong direction to the wrong place, not having the address, not knowing where I was going. And I remember the first night that I gave a talk in San Francisco, I was supposed to teach at 7 o'clock and I arrived about 20 minutes late. And I sat down and I said, I got very, very lost coming here. And somebody put their hand up and they said, I got lost in San Francisco and that's why I'm here. So, and then normally I never know what I'm going to talk about. So even though I know I never know what I'm going to talk about. It's just whatever comes out. So tonight I was given a topic. But usually what I do is I kind of, as I'm walking down to go and sit or something, something might come into my head, or I'll just kind of see what's going on. And so I was watching, as we were driving to San Francisco, for the signposts, what to talk about. Because healing the pain is a very big topic, right? It's a huge topic. It's a very good topic. And so what happened was, every single thing that could possibly go wrong went wrong. And so we're in the car, we're going the wrong direction, don't know where we're going. Then we arrive and something breaks, we're getting in another car and we run out of gas. And I thought, well, I think the sign here is to do with letting go. Because somehow you're in the process and you're heading somewhere and everything's going wrong and there's nothing you can do. There's just nothing that you can do. So you have to let go. Finally, you have to let go. So I think that's the topic for tonight, is going to be about letting go. So first of all, I should say something, because I'm given this topic, healing the pain. And when I sat down, I started thinking, what are we going to talk about with healing the pain? I started to realize that I have so many experiences of this, having to heal the pain in my life. Like, it comes up again and again and again. And I find that I go through an awful lot. And I have to pull myself out. And then again things will happen and I have to pull myself out. And I was thinking to myself, now look, here you are, you're a nun. You've been ordained how many years? Maybe 17 years. Why is it that you're still going through all this stuff? That's interesting, right? You might get discouraged. And so I was thinking, there's something going on. There's something going wrong here. Maybe I shouldn't be giving this talk. Maybe I haven't quite figured it out. And then it started to occur to me that, no, actually that is the point. That is the point. Because once you start to engage in spiritual practice, what happens is, of course, you also start to become very honest, or you should do. If you're practicing a spiritual path, you have to be extremely honest. Otherwise, you're not practicing. It's not truly connecting with your heart. Would you agree? There has to be a total, absolute commitment, honesty. It has to be something that's moving the heart. To me, if you are engaged in spiritual practice, there has to be movement. There has to be change. Something has to be happening. Now, how do you get things happening unless you begin to expose the wounds of the mind? Are you with me? So sometimes the more you practice, the more this stuff starts coming up. Don't let that put you off. It's not necessarily because you're practicing. You don't have to practice to have suffering. I mean, there's plenty of suffering and it comes all the time. It's just that when you are practicing, it's useful. Because when the wounds get exposed, if instead of trying to cover them up and make everything nice and comfortable again, and run away and distract the mind and do something else, you actually use that experience. You actually start to examine and look, which of course we don't want to do, right? The wound gets exposed, we want to run off. I mean, we want to cover everything up. We don't want to admit that there are wounds. But if you use that situation, then there can be great movement and great change. And you're on the path. when you're covering things up and making everything nice and comfortable, you're not necessarily on the path. There's not necessarily anything happening. So when I look back, now I'm going to say here when I look back, right? Not when I'm going through it. But when I look back on all these experiences I go through of difficulties and problems, something happened. I was able to move on. There was growth. And there wasn't without it. You know, without it you keep on going and everything's okay and blah 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 blah, but of course everything's not really okay, is it? You're just not dealing with stuff. When you look back on all the difficult experiences you have, then all of them are opportunities for growth. And what is growth other than healing? In a way, the spiritual path is about healing. It's about healing. Buddhism, definitely, we have to say the entire spiritual path is about healing, because our belief is that there does not need to be any suffering at all. Our belief is in our own pure nature, our own goodness, our own complete, utter perfection and goodness, which is always with us. It never goes away. It never leaves us. But we turn away from it again and again and again. And we turn away from it and we go towards our suffering. And we go towards our pain. We cling on to things. We cling on to our views. We cling on to so many things we cling on to. I have to say that whatever you cling on to, you'll experience pain. Whenever I experience pain, it's because I'm holding on to something. The more things you're holding on to, and the harder you hold, the greater the pain. Are you with me? Always. If there's some kind of problem going on, I have to check, you know, what is it that I'm holding on to? What is it that I won't let go of? Letting go is a very big subject. In order to let go, you see, I think you'll find every tradition is talking about letting go, especially in Buddhism. The great master Ajahn Chah, he said, if you let go a little, you get a little happiness. You let go more, you get more happiness. You let go completely, you get complete happiness. But you see, we tend to see things quite superficially, so we hear let go and we think, oh my goodness, I've got to give everything up. I don't like this Buddhism stuff. I mean, it goes against everything I've ever been taught, which is, I've got to get as much as I can. So what is all this Buddhism saying? You've got to let go of everything? That means that you can't have everything? It's like everything is suffering. Like, oh yeah, that's right, the Buddha said everything's suffering, that means I have to give up everything and be miserable. No. 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 The Buddha said everything's suffering. Why is it suffering? Because we're holding on. Because we're clinging. Because we won't let go. Letting go is a very big subject, because letting go doesn't mean letting go of all the outside things. It means deeply, inwardly letting go. Letting go of what? Letting go of all the causes of suffering and all the causes of the pain that we experience, which are nowhere other than our own minds. That's a big one. All the causes of our suffering and problems lie within our own minds. Now, I mean, you might disagree with that and say, oh no, there's plenty of things outside that cause me problems, and we can go along with that. There are a lot of outside conditions, but always our experience is determined by our mind. How we experience things, how we react to things, how we respond to things is coming from our own mind. That means that there is no situation that cannot shift when there's an inner shift. That means that in order to heal, in order to become enlightened, in order to achieve liberation from suffering, all you have to do is move the mind. Change the mind. Change the mind. And everything outside changes. Right? Change the mind, everything outside changes. Well, again, you know, that's not what we were brought up to think. I mean, we've been brought up since the word go. I don't know, what's the expression? Since we were born, we're brought up to think that all the problems in our lives come from outside. So basically you find the object to blame. Then I guess you go to war with it. There's always something out there that you can blame. The habit to blame is so strong. There's always something outside. The problem, I mean, you just have to think about it. Like, whatever you're experiencing today or have experienced this week, it's like, if it was a problem, it was somebody else's fault, right? It's always somebody else's fault. It's always something out there. It's the economy. It's the government. It's another country or another, I don't know what. It's trillions of things that you can blame. There's no end of things that we can blame. The problem with blaming outside is then we become a helpless victim. Because if there's all these trillions of things that can at any moment arise as the enemy, we're helpless. I mean, we're just kind of these disempowered beings that are kind of bopping along, experiencing suffering after suffering, and we can't do anything about it. There's no hope. Then the spiritual path, well, this is, you know, Buddha said very, very clearly. I think this is the most amazing thing that the Buddha said. Of course, he said many amazing things, but this one I like very much. He said, there's nothing outside of blame. So the spiritual path becomes accepting responsibility for the life. Accepting responsibility for whatever happens. That's spiritual maturity. Actually, you can practice a religion, you can practice spiritual path for years and years and years and never get this one. Isn't it right? I mean, I've done it myself. The habit has always got to be something out there. There's got to be something out there that is going to bring me happiness, and there's got to be something out there that's the cause of my problems and suffering. And nothing changes. The problem goes on and on and on. Everything goes round and round and round. And there's no resolution, there's no solution. Because nothing's changed inside. So there can't be. A friend of mine told me the other day that in the AA, I have to get this right, she said, in the AA, the definition of insanity is that if you continually do the same action, you'll get different results. Is that right? Somebody know, what is it? Okay, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Well, we're all kind of insane, aren't we? In that regard. I mean, because over and over again we're thinking that there's something out there that is truly the cause of happiness, and something out there that's truly to blame for the problems. And so we miss it. We miss the fact that we've got the solution right with us all the time. The solution which doesn't cost anything. The solution which is simply a question of moving the mind. It's simply a question how we're looking at things. I said, you know, spiritual path requires absolute honesty. And of course it's kind of difficult to take that step and say, well, maybe I'm the one that can produce a solution. But ultimately it's the only way to go. So letting go. And letting go is about moving the mind. It's about bringing those shifts, those changes that change everything outside, change our own experience and change others' experience. But how do you do it? And again, it sounds like really unpleasant, doesn't it? You mean I've got to let go? You mean it's like they have to be right? It sounds like either you mean they have to be right even though they're wrong? I mean, everyone knows they're wrong. You mean I have to say they're right? Even though they're wrong, it's obvious they're wrong. Or it's like, you mean I just got to lie down on the floor and beat myself up again? That's the solution? Well, I don't like that solution. And of course the answer is no. Neither of those two. Because letting go doesn't come from the ego, it comes from wisdom. In order to let go, and here's a big one, you have to first of all identify what you're holding on to. Correctly. Oh, you've got that. And that takes some work. So I find myself in these situations, and just recently I was going through, I was kind of through, quite a difficult time. And of course, what do you do when you're going through a difficult time? You just go round and round and round. And generally we just drag ourselves from person to person trying to get comforted, right? You poor thing. And it doesn't get any better. It's like the more they comfort you, eventually you get fed up with people who are comforting you. It's like they also become the problem. I remember I shouldn't say this, but I remember when my mother died, the hardest thing to deal with was the mourners, who all kept on coming saying how sad they were, that they hadn't done this and they hadn't done that. And it was like each time it was like more becoming more and more painful every time they said that, because I was sitting there thinking, well, I didn't do this and I didn't do that. So it's like you drag yourself around and you try and distract yourself or something. And then I remember thinking to myself, look, all I have to do basically to solve this situation is to sit myself down and say to myself, what is happening to me right now is absolutely perfect. And I can deal with it. Not only that, but what is happening to me right now is exactly what I need to experience in order to learn. In other words, I need this. Can you do it? And there you are, and you're suffering, you're physically, mentally suffering, and you're sitting down saying, I need this. But you're not saying it like, I need this. You're saying, I need this. And it's a voice of wisdom. It's the voice of healing. It's the voice that can bring about the change. I often say to people, you go to the place of deepest pain and you'll find the deepest healing. You go to those places nobody wants to go to. You don't want to go there, but you go there. But you take the Buddha with you. That means you take your wisdom with you. You take your compassion with you. And you see what it is that is teaching you. And that way you grow so fast. You come to the point where you'll be begging for problems. Maybe not begging for problems. You know, the thing is, you don't have to beg for problems anyway because they'll come. It's like, maybe if I give this talk, you know, my teacher always says, he says that eventually, if you really use problems, he says you get to the point where it's like ice cream, you can't get enough. You just want more and more and more. Having problems is like eating ice cream, like you just want more and more and more. But of course, it's not that you have to go out and look for problems, it's not like that, masochistic. You can just stay in your room all day, problems will come. And they'll come one after another. Because why? Because the causes of them are in the mind. And those causes in the mind are not resolved, they're not worked out, they're not solved. So as long as those causes are not solved, problems are going to manifest. You don't even have to have anyone around you. They will come, and they'll come one after another. And that's why they're really useful. Because every time these problems arise, they are showing you what it is that you have to do, the work that you have to do. They're showing you what you have to deal with. So here we are, and I'm sitting down, and I'm saying to myself in this gruesome situation, what is happening to me, remember these words, what is happening to me is exactly what I need. And I can deal with that. I can deal with it, it's very important. Because you have to have the courage and the confidence that you can. But you can deal with anything. We can all deal with anything. We have so much wisdom in us. We have the answers in us. We have so much wisdom. We have so much potential. It's like we doubt ourselves. Get rid of the doubts. Doubt causes problems. Get rid of the doubts and fears. They're like the demons. So what I'm experiencing right now is actually absolutely perfect. How about if I look at it this way and I can deal with it? And in fact, I need this because this is showing me the work that I haven't yet done that I have to do to grow. Why do I have to grow? Not just for myself, but for others. And it was very interesting because the minute I said that and thought that and meant it, now sometimes you have to repeat this like 10 or 20 times until it's coming from the heart. It's like, you know, first, oh, I'm not just saying what I need, it's exactly what I need. But you're still clinging on to something. And eventually it's like, no, this is exactly what I need. And the interesting thing was, the minute I said that, some space came into my mind. And in that space in my mind, I was able to think, now, if this is perfect, what is it it's showing me? And it was like this little flash of lightning. It's like, oh, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. You see, generally the problem comes not from the experience itself, but from how we are experiencing, how we're looking at it. How we think and feel about something is coming from how we're perceiving it. And how we're perceiving it is up to us. That's how we're looking at it. We have a habit to look at something as a problem, it becomes a problem. If you don't look at it that way, it can become something totally different. And then you think and you feel about it differently. You see, just within that movement, oh, now why is this perfect? Now, the minute I said to myself, why is this perfect, I started to see something. It's perfect because the thing that was wrong was what was happening in my mind. The thing that was wrong was what was happening in my mind. Are you with me? And I could see in that moment, it's like there's this flash of lightning and everything is silhouetted, you know? At that moment, there was just this glimpse of the silhouettes of what it was that was wrong in my mind. And then it was like, oh, if I wasn't holding on to this, there wouldn't be a problem. If I wasn't clinging to this, there wouldn't be this problem. I have this little thing that I say over and over again when I'm teaching, especially teaching Letting Go, and it goes like this. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, it's a Tibetan Buddhist. It's very profound. It comes from Tibetan Buddhism. I think like in the Nyingma tradition. It's very profound, but I'm not quite sure who said it. But it goes like this. Whatever comes, just let it come. Whatever goes, just let it go. Don't have need of anything. And I usually say to people, sit down and just say this to yourself until it hits the right spot. Whatever comes, just let it come. Now, whatever comes, just let it come. That doesn't mean, you know, lie down on the ground and let everyone hit you. What it means is, don't have any resistance. The thing is that when difficult things happen to us, we have all this resistance to them. And that is creating the problem, the suffering. Our resistance to it. Our resistance is like the shoulds and the shouldn'ts, you know. This shouldn't be happening, and it shouldn't be happening to me, and it shouldn't be happening to me. This should not be happening, it should not be happening to, it's a very big me, right? Big shoulds, big me. I mean, it is happening. Happening. Forget it. This is what's happening. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it, really? It's like, here I am in this car, we're heading the wrong direction, and there's traffic, and it's like, well, this is happening. It's happening to me. I'm supposed to give a public talk, I'm going in the wrong direction, I don't know where I'm going. This is what's happening, okay. It's happening. Then go. So you get rid of the resistance. I also call that acceptance. But you have to be careful with this word acceptance or surrender, because people tend to think again, oh, this is a very weak thing. Actually, it's a very courageous thing. Acceptance that comes from wisdom, acceptance that comes from the wisdom, then they are. I just have to work with it. I have to put effort. Things don't have to change. I have to come to a point where I don't need to control everything outside anymore. I can allow things to be as they are, and I can flow with that. I can work with it. This is when you really start to control. You really start to control when you're controlling your mind and your response, not outside, because you can't control outside. The more we try and control outside, the more we frustrate ourselves. The more we think things should or shouldn't be like this or like that, the more problems we get, the more we suffer. So whatever comes, just let it come. Meaning, just allow whatever's happening to happen. Allow it to happen and work with it. Are you with me? Whatever goes, just let it go. Same thing, really. This is what's happening. The third line is the one which I always feel like kind of knocks the nail in the right spot, and that is, don't have need of anything. Now, this is the real one. Because you sit there, first of all, you get rid of your resistance to whatever's happening, whatever's arising. Don't resist it, allow it to be. And this is also like saying, whatever's happening is exactly what I need. Allow it to be happening. It is happening. Whatever goes, just let it go. And then in that space, don't have need of anything. Now here we are, because here is that we have to identify what it is in the situation that we're experiencing that is causing this pain we think that we need. Always, you will find this. If you search, you will find there's a sense that I need something and I'm not getting it. And wisdom mind has to come and say, actually, you don't need anything. You don't need anything. We don't need anything. Actually, we are complete, we are perfect in ourselves. Now, I'm not saying you don't need to eat or drink. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the emotional needs, the mentally created needs, the things that we cling on to. Somebody told me a story, and I was teaching on about letting go, and somebody came up and they said, oh, what you were talking about reminded me of an old woman who was admitted into hospital, and she's admitted into the intensive care. Do you call it that in America? Intensive care. So this old lady, she's admitted into the intensive care. Everyone can visualize this. And she's shouting and she's screaming. And her hands are clenched. And the police drag her in and they overpower her. And they, as she's abusing them and screaming at them and struggling, they prize open her fingers, this old lady, one by one, because they think she has something harmful. She's holding on to something harmful. And that when they prize open her fingers, one after the other, what do they find? About three old coins. Three old coins. Crazy, isn't it? And I mean, you look at that example, and is there any difference between me and the old lady? Of course, to us it's just three old coins. To her it's something really precious that she feels that she has to cling on to, and she's protecting. But isn't that the same for all of us? We're clinging on to things we think are precious that we don't need. And because we're clinging on so hard, trying to protect them, we suffer. It's a question of identifying what it is. What is it that I think that I need? Are you with me? Yeah. I hope everybody's with me. This is not an intellectual talk tonight. I'm not intellectual. I'm hoping that what I'm saying is going to resonate, that it will make sense, that you'll be able to feel it. These things that we hold on to that cause problems. It's like in relationships, you know, you're holding on to something. And all you have to do to solve the problem is to let go. But even they're prizing open her fingers and taking the coins, she's still shouting and screaming at them. Because she feels she's losing something. Familiar, isn't it? And that's the thing, it's like we hold on to things that we don't need, but we think we need them, and then we don't want to let go. And we shout and scream when people try and take them away. Now this is the very thing that Buddha's saying, let go. And you have to say to yourself, no, why is it that I won't just let go of this? The interesting thing is, if you can identify what you're holding on to, you'll know it's painful. You'll know you don't need it. And you'll know it's the holding on that causes pain. And yet, letting go of it, there's resistance. I don't want to let go of it. Even I know this is causing me pain, but I don't want to let go. I don't want to let go. Why? Because I think I'm losing something. What am I losing? This is a big question. You have to ask yourself this. You have to go through step by step. What do I think that I'm going to lose? if I let go. I think when I was asking myself these questions, I came up with some answers. Why don't I let go in this situation? If I let go, everything can be solved. There's a solution. And it seemed like the reason that I wouldn't let go was because of me. I. Because I'm the most important one. Are you with me? Pride. I won't let go because I think I'm very important. And why should I let go and give the other person the victory? There's something like, almost something's going to be taken away from you. Are you following me here or not? If you're following me here, then we've now got to a really, really important place. Because this one, this sense of being the most important one, I am the most important one. And if I let go of this, what's left? If I let go of this, what's left? Okay, it's causing me pain, but at least it gives me an identity. Oh, goodness me. I have to tell you a story now. Because this has come up several times. It might come up in the question and answer. I was in New Zealand maybe about 2 years ago, and I was giving a talk about anger and dealing with anger. And one man, this is a very controversial story, by the way. I'm going to tell it anyway. I've been told off for telling this, but I don't care. I'm going to tell it. Yeah. So this young man came to the talk, and I was talking about anger, and I was saying how you don't need to be angry. We don't need to be angry. We don't need to be angry. It's amazing, isn't it? We don't need to be angry. And he got very upset about this. See, I mean, you're laughing, but he actually got very, very upset. And he kept objecting. Like, what do you mean we don't need to be angry? He said, I need my anger. My anger keeps me alive. Yeah, now you know what I'm talking about. So then we got into this whole subject, and of course, you know, he was abused when he was young. And he said, the only thing that has kept me alive is my anger and my hatred. And I looked at him and I said, you don't need to be angry. You don't need your hatred to be alive. It's harming you. You can let go. You can let go right now. You can walk out of this room without your anger. And of course he got upset and he kept objecting. And eventually he got up and he stormed out of the room. And the people said to me, well, are you going to follow him? And I said, no. So the talk finished and I went out to him, and he was standing there and he came running up to me. I'm really sorry that I got angry, but, and then he started again, the whole thing over and over and over again. And I looked at him and I said, look, you can hold on to your sad story, but I'm not going to. You can let go of it right now if you want to. And he got angry again. So he left. And I thought, well, I probably won't see him again, but anyway, what to do? 2 days later, there's a phone call. And it's him on the phone. And he said to me, can I come see you? I said, of course. He said, can I come now? I said, sure, okay. So 20 minutes later, you know, brakes are screeching. And he's outside. And I thought, oh, here we go again. We're going to the same thing again, how I need my anger over and over again. Anyway, we went for a walk and we talked, and he looked at me and he was shaking. And he said to me, you know, since we had this talk 2 days ago, I haven't been able to sleep. I cannot go to sleep at night. And I looked at him and he's visibly shaking. And you know why he's shaking? Because nobody had told him before that he can let go of his anger, and he was so scared. He was so scared to let go of his anger and his hatred. That's interesting, isn't it? Really scared. And why is he scared? Because he had no other identity. I told this story a couple of months ago, and similar, someone who had been through a similar experience got angry at me. So I had to go through the story very, very slowly. Very, very slowly, just looking at all the different points. Not to get confused about this. Of course I'm not saying that he didn't have a reason, you know, that he hadn't had a very bad time, that it hadn't been difficult. The thing was that this belief that I have to hold on to my anger, and without that I don't have any identity, I said to her, you know, okay, sure, you had anger and that helped you get through it, but you can let go now, can't you? Can't you identify with your love? Wouldn't that be a better thing to identify with? Because actually holding on to the anger is continuing the abuse. It's harming yourself. Okay, there was this harm, but it stopped, it finished. That was then. This is now. The future, the future. If you let go, then you can identify with your love. But as long as you identify with your hatred, you can't move on. You're trapped in that place of being a victim. You see what I mean? But he felt that if he let go of that, he'd lost himself. And that's, you know, I tell this story because I think this story again is something that I can identify with, that maybe we can all identify with. That there's a sense that, well, if I let go of this, what's left? What's left of me? If I let go of my anger towards this person, what's left? Of course, what's left is fantastic. What's left is you do like this. Basically, you try it, let go. We think that letting go is painful. Actually, the pain is the holding on, and the sense that there is pain if I let go is the trick of the ego. So you let go, but you let go with wisdom, and you go through that pain, and there's joy. I promise you, there's relief. There's relief because you're no longer holding on to the thing that was causing pain. And it's not immediately obvious because the ego plays tricks. Now, why did I say before, if you've got to this point, that you can see that the reason I don't want to let go is I don't want to lose something and I'm important. Why is it very special to get to that place? Because in Buddhism we say that the root of all suffering ultimately is self-cherishing. And what is self-cherishing? It is this feeling that I am more important than anybody else. There's me, this separate, isolated entity, and it's the most important thing that exists. Everyone out there is just basically to kind of keep it happy or make it happy. So we're sitting in a room, I don't know how many people in this room, let's say there's 100 people in this room. How many people? Huh? Exactly. 200? So 200 people in this room. But there's this feeling that I'm the most important one. You know what I'm saying? If you're in a room with 50 people, there's a sense that I'm more important than the other 49. If you're with 3 people, I'm more important than the other 2. If you're with 200, I'm more important than the other 199. If you're in a stadium with 50,000, well, there's 50,000 people in the stadium, but I'm the most important one. How many people in America? I don't know, a billion? Maybe not. Half a billion. 200 only? Really? Well, you guys better get working. I mean, India's got over a billion now. China's got over a billion. Underpopulated. And it costs more to be alive in America. So there's 250 million in America, but I'm the most important one. Isn't it? This mind that I'm the most important one, Buddhism says, Dalai Lama says, same thing, is the one that causes the suffering, is the one that causes the problems. This one is the one that causes problems. That's why problems are so useful. Because if there's a problem, it's because you're clinging to this one. So every time there's a problem, it's going to show you how you're clinging to this one, and how clinging to this one causes suffering. Are you with me? I was in a teaching this weekend with Venerable Chidam Rinpoche, who's going to be teaching over the weekend in San Francisco, and I put up my hand and asked him a question, and I said, something about suffering. I said, when you're experiencing a lot of mental suffering, how was it? How did it go? When you're experiencing a lot of mental suffering, how is it that the mind can stay firm in the face of that suffering? And he said, the only reason it's suffering is because you cherish yourself. Now, are you with me? Suffering is suffering because you're clinging to the I. If you don't cling to the I, it's not suffering. It's just an experience. And it becomes very useful. Why does it become very useful? Because the suffering you experience, again, you don't have to go out and look for it. It will find you, don't worry. The suffering that we experience, first of all, it's the nature. It's the nature of our reality. But secondly, it's what everyone is experiencing. And so therefore, experiencing our own suffering is a way to develop compassion. It's a way to open your heart to others. If everything's nice and comfortable in life, how can you truly open your heart to others? And if you never truly open your heart to others, how can you develop compassion? How can you be happy? If your heart's closed and there's barriers between you and others, how can you truly be happy? In fact, if one thinks that oneself is the most important one, then how can one be happy? Always there'll be conflict. Why? Because you're always the most important one, therefore you're always using others for your happiness. And the Buddhist one, the one that brings the enlightenment, the one that brings happiness, is the one that uses self for others. The one that says, okay, 50 people in this room, the other 49 are really important to me. 200 people in this room, the other 199 are really important to me. 2 people in the room, the other one is really important to me. My teacher, he used to say, well, he still does, but I remember years ago he gave his teaching, and he said, if you can truly care, cherish, love just one other being, you can love all of them. What is he talking about? If you can love just one, you can love all. What is he talking about? That's strange, isn't it? It's easy to love one other being, isn't it? I'm shaking my head. This is the problem being a nun sometimes, you see. And then I came across a situation where my mother became very sick, and I had to leave everything and go back. Well, I didn't have to, but I chose. I haven't got a watch, by the way, so I had to leave everything and go back. I chose to leave everything and go back and take care of her. And she was terminally ill, and she'd become more and more sick. Now, here's a very interesting thing with my mother, because physically, as she approached death, she had cancer. She didn't die from cancer, she died from all the things that come when you have cancer, you know. She's quite old, so because this fails, that fails. So with the whole deterioration of the physical. But the interesting thing was, the closer she got to death, the more healed she became. Because she used all that suffering to develop inwardly. And so, just before she died, I had a photo of her totally glowing. I would say she was completely healed. When she died very beautifully. She died healed. 2 years before, when I went back to take care of her, she wasn't like that. Physically, she looked healthy, but inwardly, she had a lot of suffering. But going towards death and having to just work things out, she began to glow inwardly. So anyway, there I am, I'm taking care of my mother for 2 years. I don't know if you guys have done caring work. It's very demanding. Very demanding. And towards the end, of course, it's 24 hours a day. And if you leave the person for 15 minutes, I was the only carer. If you leave the person for 15 minutes, they're calling for you. They're crying helplessly. So you can't leave. You can never leave them. Mentally, physically, even if you go to sleep, you can hear them breathing. You never leave them. And then I started to understand what Rinpoche said. That if you can truly love just one other being, you can love all of them. Because you know how difficult it is to truly love one other being? To truly love. I mean, not to say I love you, to say I love you is easy. But to truly, totally cherish one other being, it takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of breaking down the selfish mind. It takes a lot of honesty, it takes a lot of facing the self-cherishing mind. I was giving a talk on Tuesday night, and I said, I realized this last retreat I did, how my biggest problem is the sense of I. That I've been brought up from when I was young to care about I. It creates the greatest obstacles in the spiritual path. It creates the greatest obstacles to happiness. When you experience a problem, you just look for the I. Just look for the I. And it's there. It's there and it's holding on to something and it won't let go. And all these conflicts that we get into, it just takes a movement of the mind to solve it. But we don't want to move the mind. It just takes a shift of view, a shift of attitude. So, of course, this is the subject of compassion now. Compassion, because when my teacher says the ultimate healing, the real healing, the ultimate healing, involves the mind. It involves our own good heart. So the real true healing comes from compassion. I have to say that, this talk. It's really the truth. It could take 20, 30 years or 20, 30 lifetimes to realize it, but it's really the truth. And every time we go through these difficulties and these wounds are exposed, you'll find the wound is connected to me and I. And you'll find that you can heal that wound by letting go of the I and cherishing others. Then it becomes really useful. That's the difference in the spiritual practice, because it's not like when you start practicing spiritual practice you don't suffer anymore. It's just that you have the method. Now you have the method to take it onto the path. Now you have the method to use it to grow, to move. Didn't I say enough? No? I'm making a watch. Can I have a watch? Can I have it? 20 to 9. I thought I'd been talking for hours. What happened? Is this working? No, that's the main point. It's all there. It's there, really. Whatever is happening, it's perfect. My friend told me the story. My teacher was staying at his house. He used to live in Hong Kong. And he went to get a, he was involved in this major business enterprise. So he went to ask my teacher for a divination, called Mo. He went to get a divination about who would be the best partner in this business, a multi-million-dollar business. Who would be the best partner? And so he gave a whole list of names, and my teacher did a lot of checking, and then he came out and he said, this person will be the best. The best. The best. Well, of course, 10 years of utter misery. I And, you know, the business venture collapsed and everything became a disaster and they lost all this money. But he learned so much. And he was being sued and, you know, they never knew they were going to survive from day to day. And all he could do was say, but it's the best! The best! So here I am trying to, here I am in the car heading towards San Francisco, and we get lost, we run out of fuel, and Roberto, my driver, is looking at me saying, this is the best. I thought, oh my goodness, he's heard some of my story. And there I was in New Zealand, and I wrote, and my mother died, and I had all the money, and I saw this fantastic piece of land, beautiful piece of land. I'm not going to advertise it. But it's very nice isn't that, and it's very cheap in New Zealand. Have you been there? It's so cheap, very cheap to live. And it's got beautiful views. See, oh, you couldn't imagine people land like this in California, be millions. It's very cheap. And so I wrote to my teacher and I said, I found this amazing piece of land and it already has a house and I'm thinking of buying it and just doing retreats for the rest of my life. What do you think? And he wrote back and he said, I think that sounds a little bit too nice and comfortable. Maybe you better come to America for a while. So I was in New Zealand, and you go to the store in New Zealand, and you have a basket full of things, and they ring it up, and you say, how much? And they tell you, and you say, are you sure you've got everything? And they say, yes, and they hand you so much change. And I come to America and I've got a few things in the basket and they bring it up and you say, how much? Are you sure you didn't add something? It's so much more expensive. So this is it really, because what we want is movement. What we want is movement. And the pain that we go through, the difficulties that we go through, the problems that we go through, they're the ones that produce the movement. They're the ones that show us what we need to do. They won't arise unless there's a cause in the mind. So the ultimate healing is the healing of the mind. And the thing that's producing all these problems is all coming from me and I, self-importance. Yeah? You see, I've said everything already. Isn't that? So questions? Yes. You're getting a microphone to ask questions.
I have a question about the connection between healing and the body. I have something wrong with my bladder, which is totally related to my inability to let go.
Yeah.
I've been to many doctors because of this and stuff, but I didn't really start to get better until I went through a hardcore spiritual journey, because I thought I had cancer. I thought that's what was wrong. I thought I had cancer in the bladder. But anyway, I feel like I'm still here. But I'm trying to, I've let go of part of it, and I'm trying to let go of the rest of it, but I'm still sick, and it's frustrating me, the body symptoms that I'm having, because they make my life much more challenging. So I'm just wondering if you have any more wisdom.
I mean, what comes into my mind is this is how it is. I'm sorry if that's too simple. Oh, I mean, there's more things that come into my mind, but the thing that really hits it is just that this is how it is. And I had the same thing. I had a long conversation with somebody on the phone today, and they were telling me how they've been going through a really difficult time spiritually, and they're feeling that their practice is like this, and they really, really want to develop, and they really want to grow. And the problem to me was very clear. I said, but you've got to be patient. I said, but I don't want to be patient. But I don't want to have to wait. I want it now. But they didn't. It's like they know when they're saying it that it's crazy to say it. But I think this is how we are, right? We want things to change. We want them to change straight away. But things change gradually, incrementally, with the mind, I would say like this, it's like you're in a car and you're driving along at speed in the wrong direction. Now what happens when you just swerve? What happens when you turn the steering wheel like this? You have an accident. You can't. You have to gradually, incrementally turn that wheel and get onto the right track. And that's how it is, that's how it is with us. So then what you have to do is, I mean, not what you have to do, but it's like, it's a question of sitting down and saying, this is how it is, and then you look at the mind that doesn't want to accept. Why don't I want to accept? This is the method I use. Why don't I want to accept? Why don't I want to accept? Of course, there's many other methods. Sometimes when you're physically sick, then you think that this is, there's so many other beings that are sick, can you imagine taking their sickness? But to actually deal with it like the hammer and the nail, like, why won't I allow this to be? When I let go, things change. But it's really hard to let go. I remember my teacher said this to me one time, he said, you see, when you let go, you get everything. And I said, yeah, I know, it's so hard to let go. It is hard, isn't it? Doesn't everyone in this room see it's hard? And that's sometimes when I'm thinking, like, as I've said before, why is it we have to go through these painful experiences over and over again? Because sometimes it has to be painful to get the lesson. A friend of mine was saying at the weekend, he'd been through incredible trauma and split up with his wife and this and that. But now he's got his robes and he's going to become a monk at the age of about 60. And he said, you know, for me, it's like, I'm so thick that unless I hit, I know my fingers are very sensitive, but unless I hit them with a hammer, I don't pay attention to it. Sometimes it has to be that strong and that hard to produce the change. And sometimes the change comes when we can just sit down and say, this is how it is. I remember there was this one great Burmese master, now I just lost the name, not Burmese, is it Cambodia where they had all this killing fields? Cambodia. Well, you'll know who I'm talking about. Anyway, he was in Thailand when all this killing was going on, so so many of his family were being killed. And there he was in Thailand, and he describes how, with his hand, he's doing like this. I'm moving my hand up, I'm moving my hand down. And his family, his relatives, his country being wiped out. And he's doing this, I'm moving my hand up, I'm moving my hand down. There was nothing else he could do. But then, when things started to change, his mind had come to a point where he had let go, he had acceptance, he had true wisdom in his mind, which comes from letting go and having acceptance. He was able to go back and do so much benefit, which he wouldn't have been able to do if he'd got upset. Do you see what I mean? Because from a little bit of letting go comes a little bit of wisdom, and from more letting go comes more wisdom, and eventually we have to come to a point where we just are let go. Well, we just don't hold on to anything. We don't hold on to anything. Doesn't mean you don't have a job, doesn't mean you don't have a car, you don't have a relationship. It means you're not clinging. You're not clinging that that's your identity. You're not. There's not this sense of emotional need which causes the suffering. Are you with me? So you can just let things be as they are. Things are as they are. And we have to come to a point where we can let them be as they are. Let the appearance be the appearance. Let whatever arises be whatever's rising. Let it be like that. And then you work with it from moment to moment. My teacher's amazing. He misses airplanes. He doesn't care. How many airplanes does he miss? He doesn't care. He doesn't arrive at public talks on time. He doesn't do anything you think he's going to do. If you think he's going to do something, he doesn't do it. If you don't think he's going to do something, he does it. I know, I've just spent a month with him. It's unbelievable. You think he's going to come, he writes his little note saying, oh, I don't think I'll come. Maybe later. Let's see what happens. So you come to a point where it's like, well, maybe he'll come, maybe he won't come. Let's see what happens. And you have to get into this because you can't work any other way with him. Because that's how he is, isn't it? And he's the most amazing, compassionate being. It's quite extraordinary, but he doesn't do what you think he'll do. And you never know what he's going to do. And he's amazing. But he always does the right thing. He always does what's absolutely perfect. That you couldn't even have dreamt of. Because he's totally open to everything. So anything can happen. And it's really fun being around him. And it's really fun watching all your ideas and opinions and shoulds and shouldn'ts tumble. And it's painful. Because it doesn't do what you want it to do. And so you have to constantly let go. It's incredible. It's such an amazing training. But actually everything is a teacher, isn't it? It's just a question of how you're viewing. If you view the appearances, if you view what arises being a teacher, it's a teacher. And it's constantly going against what you think it should be or shouldn't be, and then you constantly have to let go and allow it to be what it is. So you come to a point where everything can be how it is, and then you're free. So I went off from your question, but I do that a lot. I just came back from Tibet. Were you putting your hand up for? I just came back from Tibet. Have I got time?
Yeah,
I just came back from Tibet and had a very, very interesting experience there. Because Tibet is a country that has been occupied now for about 50 years. 59, 60? 40 years? 40 years. And when I've been there 15 years ago, but now it's really changed. When I went 15 years ago, there was a sense of hope, there was a sense of change, there was a sense that, well, we've been through a really hard time, but now things can get better. And when I went there this time, there was a sense of hopelessness. It's never going to change. The whole country now is, you know, populated by Chinese, basically. So Tibetans have become a minority. And this is not freedom. Everything is controlled. Everything is controlled, but if you have a mind that practices, if you have devotion, nobody can control you. So this is very interesting, because before, of course, in Tibet, everything was outside, right? 6,000 monasteries, prayer wheels, prayer flags. Then what happened when everything got difficult is everything had to go inside. And I met the most extraordinary people there who were totally free. I would have to say, totally free. And yet, they were working for, you know, governments, Chinese government people. They had these jobs. They were externally, it looked like everything they did was controlled. But their minds were completely free. Their minds are free. And that was very, very interesting, because somehow they just didn't need anything. They were totally within themselves sufficient. Everything had been taken away, and so they were left with all that was really important, which was their practice, which was their devotion, which was the depth of their being. And they were just connected. They were connected with the truth. And it didn't matter what was going to happen, because it didn't matter what was going to happen, because whatever happened was what happened. And you just went along with what happened, because you were free. And when I came out of Tibet, I came out to Nepal, and I was looking at all these people who were supposedly living in a free country, and it seemed to me like they were very trapped, because the mind is always going out, always clinging on to something, very materialistic. There's so many distractions. There's so many things outside. And you have so much and your mind clings onto it and it all clutters up. So you don't have freedom. Freedom is the mind that doesn't hold on to anything. Because there's nothing to hold on to. There is nothing to hold on to. And it's the holding on that brings the pain and the suffering. And when you don't hold on to things, you can't be controlled and you can't be harmed. Now, then a very interesting thing happens, because if you can get your mind to abide in that space where you're not clinging or holding on to anything, then you see how much pain comes from, you know, the hallucination, the holding on, and then you can truly benefit others. You can really, really help others because you're not trapped. So real compassion comes, because you see how it's the mind that's creating all suffering. Do you see? They do quite a lot of work to get there. But once you get there, then you can really benefit so much. Because you see how much suffering is there because of the wrong way of viewing things. Anyway, the mental and the physical, they are connected. They're very much connected. Very much connected. Is there another question? Yeah, please.
Thank you for your inspiration. I'm enjoying the talk. I have actually two questions. Something the first one you shared.
Mm-hmm.
I remember what happened to the angry man. Did he adopt another identity? Did he lose his anger? And if he adopted another identity, what was it? That's the first question.
Mm.
And the second question is more global.
Do you want to stop for the first one?
Okay.
The first one first. I want to vote on that. How many people think he let go of his anger? How many people think he's still holding on to that? Equal, isn't it? Equal, yeah. I don't know what happened to him. He never showed up again. He never showed up again. He was basically coming because he wanted to defend himself. He wanted me to say to him it was okay to hold on to his sad story. And I didn't want to do that.
Did he start shaking?
I think he wasn't shaking anymore. I think he just wanted to show me how deep it was. So I think he probably went on and did, you know, a lot more therapy and stuff like that. But my hope is that there's a seed there, and eventually when he is strong enough, he does know that there's another way. But I do know what happened to the second person who got upset. Because she came to see me, and she said that, and she'd been going through an experience where a kind of a forgotten abuse, you know, you have this thing and you forget it, it come up, and she felt that that year of going through having anger had helped her, although she'd lost her job, she was physically sick, all these other things. And I had to go step by step through with her, asking her, you know, do you really feel good when you have anger? Do you really think this is the best thing? Do you really think it's helping the situation? And then we got to a point where she said that what she really wanted to do was to help others in that situation. And then I said to her, you know, as long as you have anger in your mind, you can't do that. Because if you stand up and say something and somebody gets angry at you, you'll collapse. Because you're not healed. So to fully heal, you have to. And she agreed with that. So I do know that she agreed, but I don't know about the angry young man.
Okay, thank you.
Mm.
Now the second question is
right.
A little bit more global.
Yeah.
If any one of the American leaders were to ask you this question, how would you answer? And the question is, where do you draw the line between self-protection and harming others?
Self-protection and harming others. Mm. Is that in the context of countries?
Okay.
Yeah, so is it relating to like war?
Yeah.
It actually relates to war, but yeah. I think it also applies to
okay.
Individuals.
Now, I want to answer this by saying what my teacher, after 7th, September 11th, after the 11th of September, my teacher wrote a letter to George Bush, and he said, he'd been listening to the radio, and on the radio they kept on saying, what's your opinion, what's your opinion? So he said, I figure I'll write down my opinion. So he was a very, very holy being, a very compassionate being, and he wrote a letter, and he started off in that letter and he said, so many problems have happened in this world because of what happened with the terrorists. And he said, now, on the one hand you have people screaming for war, and the other hand you have people screaming for peace. And so the problem is, these people who are screaming for peace, it's all very well, but you have to have some solution to what happened. And he said, the problem with the screaming for war is that the war is not necessarily the best solution. Because he said, if you go out there and you start attacking, you create these enemies, and in the future they come back and harm you. So it's not always a solution. And then he went on and he wrote a whole letter about how to deal with terrorism and how to deal with this. And I think there's many points that he put in that, but I think the main thing that he said was, he's always very surprised that a huge country like America, whenever there's a natural disaster, now, natural disaster, it's called natural disaster, actually, from the Buddhist point of view, we don't think it's natural. We think it has to do with what's going on, basically. There's a reason natural disasters happen. So he said, he finds it very strange when these difficult situations like terrorist attack and natural disasters happen, that always they look for kind of a solution other than a religious one. Because he said, you know, there's so many churches in this country, and there's so many people of different religions, and there's so many ways that we could deal with this through prayer and spiritual methods. Why don't we look that way? Why do we look to the wars and the guns? Why don't we look to changing things spiritually, doing prayers and so forth? This was what he was saying. You remember when these children were killing with guns? There were children at schools killing with guns. I remember at that point there was a debate on the television about gun control. And I remember my teacher was saying he watched this whole debate, went on for over an hour, and there were all these experts. And some of these experts were saying, we should have gun control, and some were saying, we shouldn't have gun control, you know, we shouldn't. And they all have all these intelligent reasons. But he said, nobody talked about the mind. He said, if you educate people, if you change the minds on them, they won't harm anyone. But if you don't put value on educating people for peace and compassion, then even if they don't have a gun, they'll find something else to harm with. So it comes back to education. And there are many other means of dealing with things. Many other means of dealing with things. The problem with going out there and harming others is that it comes back. It creates fear. It creates hatred. It creates divisiveness. And then, you know, maybe it's not always clearly identified who the enemy is, and it just becomes a generic, huge enemy. Anyone of this nationality or anyone of this religion is a problem. Which is difficult, right? Because it's not true. So, I think there are other ways. But that doesn't mean that you don't have to protect yourself. Is that alright? Yeah. Okay. Hi.
I'm going to change the subject a little bit. I'm wondering whether you could speak to the Gaucho Doctrine of memory.
Speak about it?
Yeah.
When I came back from Tibet, I went to do a retreat for 10 days in this nunnery, and it's quite an amazing place because in the past, in Tibet, commonly monks studied and nuns prayed. Monks studied and debated, and nuns did pujas and prayers. That's what you did. So if you were a nun in old Tibet, you rarely got a really thorough philosophical education. And now there's about two or three nunneries only, not many, where nuns are actually being educated in debate and logic and really training and becoming very proficient, and eventually, hopefully, they're going to get what we call Geshe degree. They have debates, inter debates. I heard that when they go and debate, the monks are kind of like watching, you know, they debate in front of the Dalai Lama, and they're really changing the system from within. It's quite remarkable. Not only that, but in this particular nunnery, it has nuns that come from Sotokumbu, which is like a border region, who normally wouldn't have gotten any education. They would just have taken care of the monastery, or they would have chanted prayers. But here they are, and they're debating, they're learning, they're studying. So they arrive in there when they're young. I saw this story. I was told by my teacher to do a retreat, and everyone kept saying to me, "Oh, you better not go there to do retreats. You'll never be able to do a retreat there." And I said, "Well, why not? Why not? What's wrong?" He said, "Oh, it's so noisy. People just run away screaming. It's so noisy." Anyway, they found me a room, and there I was from early morning to late night. It was so noisy. It was fantastic. Because all the noise was prayers. All the noise was prayers. And what happens is, because of doing study and debate in the Tibetan system, what you do when you first enter into a monastery or nunnery is you memorize all texts that you're going to be studying later on. It's an amazing system. So when you memorize, what you do is you read it, you memorize it, and then you have to repeat it over and over again so you don't forget. So perched up on the roof, perched down on the lawn, perched here, perched there, nuns everywhere. Of all different kinds and shapes and sizes, from young to old. I was just the Dharma pouring out of them. From early morning to late night, it was just the Dharma. And then the evening we used to do chit practice. And the mornings we used to do long pujas. And I'd hear these kind of nuns' voices leading all these, but it was amazing. It was so inspiring. Totally inspiring. Because I remember when this nunnery first started, maybe about 10 years ago or something. And over those 10 years, I've watched some of these nuns. Then there were some of them are in 3-year retreat, and you never see them. They're in solitary. And apparently, my teacher went to see them. He said, "Oh, you know, they're getting on really well. They're a bit fat, a bit overweight, but they're enjoying themselves." That's because they're doing their meditation. So there's some of them doing 3-year retreats, some of them learning dancing and other skills, ritual dancing, and then some of them are debating, and some of them are doing this, and some of them are doing that, and it's just amazing. But I remember when I came back, I was giving this talk about prayer and how important prayer was, and just using the example of these nuns, and when they enter the nunnery, they're reciting all these prayers, and then as you see them develop and progress, they become these prayers. And there's no gap between the words that they're reciting and the understanding in their minds. So this is very, very incredibly inspiring. So I came back, I had this wonderful retreat, and my teacher said, "I told you! I told you you'd enjoy it." Very beautiful how the mind that's engaged in spiritual practice just becomes more and more and more pure over the years. You cannot do that in ordinary life. It doesn't happen. The mind that's clinging to ordinary things doesn't become more and more pure over the years. You don't see that transformation. But the mind that is working, the mind that is using all experience, you see transformation, you see purity, you see happiness, you see joy, real joy. Not the external things we call happiness, but the true inner joy. You see it. You see it growing like a light inside of people. And then you see that no matter what arises, whether there's problems or difficulties, just it's all taken on to the past. And there I had this experience of coming back from Tibet where I'd seen these amazing beings. Of course the Dalai Lama is one of them, who've used every single adversity to develop the greatest compassion, and therefore from the depths of his being can talk to all of us. And we hear him. We hear him. But I don't know if he hadn't gone through so much suffering and difficulty if the world would listen. I truly don't. If he had just grown up in Tibet and everything had been nice and comfortable, do you think that the world would respect him so much and honor him so much. And when he talks about peace and not having anger and hatred, that people would truly hear that. Or they'd say, well, you know, you can talk about these things, but you had a nice comfortable life. You know, here we are living in the West. No, he hasn't had a comfortable life. It's like his whole life has been to prove that if you use everything, then you can benefit so much. You can grow so much. Yeah.
How can us ordinary, non-ordained beings achieve a higher level? I mean, we can't do the practice as intensely as a monk or a nun.
Yes.
We have our day-to-day life, we have our attachments, we have our this, that, and the other.
Yes.
And our huge sense of self.
Yes.
So given all that stuff, what's this person to do? To try to get better.
You're not ordinary. Nobody's ordinary. Everyone's very precious. Everyone is extremely precious. All of us. We're all extremely precious. We're all extremely loved. We all have everything that we need to develop. I think it's kind of unhelpful to say, oh, because this one's wearing robes or this one. It's not about that. It's about whether you get it or not. It's about whether you know what you have to do and you do it. And I think, for example, even I look at some of my teachers who are incredibly holy beings, but they can't reach people I can reach. And they can't reach people you can reach. And I say that when the Dalai Lama walks on the stage, because I had this experience, we were organizing the Heart of Wisdom, and the Dalai Lama walks on the stage, there's 19,000 people there, and it's like 19,000, it's like 19,000 matches lighting, and it's like 19,000 hearts opening and connecting. And those 19,000 people in the Dalai Lama, they're one. And those 19,000 people who carry the message out with them will reach people the Dalai Lama will never reach. So I think every single one of us is really important and precious. Because every single one of us has connections with people others don't. Every single one of us has the work that we have to do. It's how long we take to click into that. It's how long it takes us to realize how precious this life is and not to waste it. Do you see? So now you're going to say to me, yeah, but I don't have the time.
No, actually, what I'll say to you now, what I'll ask you now is then, you know, how then do I grow the light?
Yeah.
How then do I expand what I can of the light within?
So when you say light within, are you referring like Dalai Lama walks on the stage and there's light?
No, I'm talking about the good nature.
Yes.
How do I accomplish and achieve and realize more and more and more of that Buddha nature, you know, centimeter by millimeter, whatever, you know, inch by inch? What can I do in my day-to-day living and practice of being human to become, to actualize more of the, that deep light within, the Buddha nature, to express it, to have more happiness and joy, all, you know, with the same thing. So my question is, how to get there?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do today, tonight, tomorrow?
What's your answer?
Looking for a roadmap.
No, what's your answer? Because I think you've already found it. What is your answer?
I guess continue my practice, try to be a good person, try to cherish others more, cherish myself less. So I kind of know up here in my head what it might look like, but it's the doing it.
Isn't it like the same question?
I think so.
At the very beginning? It's like the answer is there in the question. The fact that you're asking that question, the fact that you're asking that question means that you're looking how to stay connected. And that's all it is. It's about staying connected. Staying connected. With the truth that you know. staying connected. Is it too simple that answer?
No, it makes sense in the sense of kind of accepting what is.
Yes.
Not resisting.
Yes.
And letting go of what goes. And
I see that in these people in Tibet, whatever happened, they just stayed connected. And so whatever happened deep in their experience, just stay connected. Don't doubt. Don't give up. Don't get distracted. Don't turn away. Stay connected.
Thank you.
Can anything else to say? I think I finished having that moment. I think I finished. Yeah. I think I finished. Because everyone has their busy lives. And they have things to do. Yes. Okay, so there's a closing prayer that we normally do. And the Tibetan is one thing. A lot of people here will know. But the meaning is that May the precious source of loving kindness, compassion, in fact, bodhicitta, which means letting go of the I, cherishing others, where it has not yet arisen, may it arise in my mind, the mind of all beings, and where it has arisen, may it never decline. Now, this prayer, wishing for compassion and love to arise within your own heart and others, and recently my teacher was saying, we do this prayer 3 times. Because this is the only solution now in the world. Now this is the only solution. Because everything in the world is becoming more and more difficult. More and more disasters, more and more wars. And the only solution is that within our minds there's more compassion and loving kindness. And that within the minds of all the world leaders and all the people, especially the terrorists who are causing this harm. Why? Because of their hatred. The people who hate America, hate themselves, all these people. The only solution is this more loving kindness and peace. So this is the solution, to pray for this. Yeah? So do it 3 times.
Chamez-e-wa.
So I was in New Zealand after my mother died, and I was going through so much trouble, so much kind of grief and torment, and my mind was so down. And I was traveling with my teacher, just seeing him again after several years of being away. And I said to him, now this experience of being with someone I love so much who's died, even you try to take care but they die, really turned my mind that I really feel I must practice now, I must practice, I must put my whole heart and being into the practice. And my teacher, three times, he said the same thing to me, the same thing. And it was very simple, but everything is contained in it. And what he said was, let go everything completely. There are no difficulties. Let go of everything, whether the object is there or not. Just let go. Everything is there. Let go of everything completely. And no difficulties. So thank you very much. I hope something useful.